Welcome to Polycast, the official podcast of a Apolton Civilization site.
Dan Quick.
Moses Snedis.
Imran Siddiqui.
And Makalua.
Guest co-hosts.
Man Jane.
Barry Caudill.
Dorian Newcomb.
That can be taken out in post, right?
Or it could be repeated five times.
Depending on how much money I have.
Raxus Games, the first sponsor of the show.
I have Dorian's headphones, but I don't have Dorian.
I have Dorian's headphones, but no Dorian. How'd that happen?
Oh, here he comes. He had to get coffee, I think.
Tell him he's going to need something stronger than that.
Irish coffee.
Something coming out of his back pocket. So do you want me to wait for you to ask him, or do you want me to just say, start going?
I'll answer the questions.
No.
Leading the charge this time around is the bulk of our discussion with Firaxis Games executive producer Barry Caudill and artist Dorian Newcomb on Civilization Revolution. A brief stopover in the news on Take-Two Interactive's third quarter financial results, and unlocking an archive Senate discussion from Episode 9 in the vault on whether or not to build Colosseums in Civilization 4. Then it's hightailing into the modcast on leaders that should not be in the Civ series, a bit of outrage over the Viking scenario music, and a push for being able to change difficulty level mid-game. Barry and Dorian become front and center once more as they address a number of miscellaneous questions. Lastly, a return trip to the vault results in an archived mailbag answer from episode 15 on finding copies of Sid Meier's first Civilization on the Mac. Part 3, our interview with Firaxis Games' Barry Caudill and Dorian Newcomb.
It just doesn't feel right unless there's a very loud laptop fan going on, though.
So, based on the screenshots, the game looks absolutely gorgeous, even compared to Civ 4, which isn't all that ugly to begin with. But it still seems to be based on the Gamebryo engine. Are you using a newer version, or have you made any improvements?
Well, anytime you use an engine, anytime you buy something like that, you still have a tremendous amount of art and programming to sort of make it your own style. And I think that what you're seeing in that difference, I think that the Gamebryo stuff is really solid to work with. We're also using something called Granny to manage the animation stuff. But what you're also seeing is a tremendous amount of programming and artistry behind that, taking all that data and really pulling out exactly what we want from it. And so I think that we're definitely getting a lot more experience with how to get particular looks down. And I know that Brian Busati, as art lead, has done a tremendous amount of work with the lighting models that he's using and with directing that process. So I think a lot of people, especially from outside the industry, think that you buy a solution like Gamebryo, and that's going to shape the way that all of your games look. You buy Gamebryo so that you have more freedom to make your games look as good as possible. And I think that's just a sign of the experience and hard work for the whole team.
Yeah, there have been updates to Gamebryo, but a lot of that stuff, that a lot of the really heavy-duty sort of tech things that we've been talking about at the trade shows, like the high dynamic range lighting and the post-processing effects and things like that, that's all been done internally.
So mobile platforms like the DS and consoles, like the Xbox 360, both place rather strong restrictions on the user interface for a complex game like Civ. How are you dealing with this, and will you have one interface for all versions of the game, or will the DS have a different approach than the Xbox or the Wii? And how will you make use of things like the Wii Remote and the DS's touchscreen?
Oh, that's like five questions.
Lame water.
It's okay. They're all interconnected. I guess the key is that for the 360 and the PS3, there are certain restrictions that are placed on you by the technical requirements of the platform, but they're pretty open. I mean, as long as you brand things correctly and you label the buttons correctly, things like that, it's not really restrictive. For those, we're actually using a Flash-based system to create the art and the layouts and things like that. So it's great because it actually scales to different, whether it's widescreen or 4x3, it doesn't matter. Whether it's, somebody's playing 1080, on the 1080p on the PS3 or 720p or 480p or whatever it is, it scales appropriately for all the resolutions. using Flash makes it really easy for us to let the artists like actually get in and do stuff. They're not completely beholden to a programmer to implement the art. Of course, the DS is going to be very different. Everything about it is different presentation-wise because there's way less memory to work with. But it's actually holding up really well on the DS. It's a lot of fun. And we use the touchscreen. You can scroll the map with the touchscreen. You can select units. You can do things in the city screen. It's funny. There's like a 50-50 split here about guys that play a game with the stylus and guys that prefer to never touch the stylus. And so we're trying to make sure the game is very accessible whichever camp you're in. The Wii version, we're just really getting rolling on that. We have the basic game engine running, and we have terrain going on that right now, but we really haven't delved into the intricacies of the interface. I think as Sid said in several interviews, you know, it's use the Wiimote, and it always sounds like I'm Elmer Fudd when I say that, but we will use the Wiimote. It's not like we're going to be actually swinging an axe or bashing someone in the head with the remote.
Darn.
Unless, of course, somebody's in the room and you want to do that. We're going to try to take advantage as much as possible. You know, we want each one to feel a little bit different, even though there's the same core gameplay. So as we get farther along, like probably in the spring and early summer, we'll have a lot more to show and talk about on the Wii.
Polycast and Apolton do not necessarily endorse using any Wii remote to bash anyone's heads in.
Please send hate mail to
exactly. Yeah.
So Sid also mentioned a new economic victory. How will that work?
It's interesting because it's based on a series of milestones that sort of help propel you towards the victory. It's as simple as it sounds, but it's not as simple to pull off. It's as simple as getting a certain amount of money. But
it's hard not to spend that money.
Yeah, it's hard not to spend it. You have to have it all. And what happens is as you go along, you'll get milestones. And it might be at 100 or 250 gold or whatever it is. And you'll maybe get a caravan unit. And then by taking the caravan someplace, you'll get a trade route established. You'll make money. You might get a settler. Of course, you then make a new city, and so that might make you more money. You know, you might get a marketplace in your city or something like that. Keeps on going and going. There's also wonders that affect that. And then there's certain great people that you can use. If somebody else is in the lead and you get the right great person, you can actually mess with them a little bit, take some of their money away and stuff like that. The cool thing about all of the four victory conditions is that they're all very viable and they're all in play through most of the game. If you're playing on a really easy difficulty level, you might just be winning on all four. But as you play harder and harder difficulty levels, you might be like, I'm trying to go for spaceship victory, but he's really close to economic victory. I'm going to go military, you know, and it's really very fun.
Speaking of difficulty levels, are we going to have a pre-settler or equivalent, or is someone going to have to mod that?
On a Sid game, like, the easiest difficulty is always really, really easy. That's the level that always has the tutorial, and you really try to take care of the player. Sid is always very interested in making sure that beginner players don't get frustrated, because we want them to get into the game, we want them to play the game, and then we want them to get better at the game. And the last thing that we want to have happen is for them to have a bad experience or lose quickly or something like that. So usually with Sid's games, you'll find that it's pretty darn hard to lose at the easiest difficulty level, if not impossible. It's not impossible, but it...
I was about to say, I think Dan...
I was about to say, is that a challenge?
If you're Dan.
He has a special talent.
I'm sure the guys in QA heard that. That'll be the first thing they do is to prove me wrong.
We're starting to see the first console games that actually support modding, like Little Big Planet and Unreal Tournament 3. Will there be any modding supported in Civilization Revolution?
We're not sure. The problem is that Sony is very, very open towards modding right now, and Microsoft's not as open because it's a tougher fight to get modded content out on live than it is through Sony. Sony has basically said, like, you make it, it gets posted. And Microsoft, usually there's an approval process. So we've talked about some things in that regard, but there's nothing concrete right now.
In all fairness, I think one of the reasons why modding is so much more stringent on consoles is just because there's a lot of younger people playing it. There's no control that you have over what kind of stuff people mod, and don't want to come downstairs and see like your 9-year-old playing something that would offend you greatly. You know, I think it's a major responsibility of the big three console manufacturers to really come up with a conscientious approach to that. And I definitely think the next generation of consoles will be a lot more open because all of those things will be figured out, but it's really hard to be the person to figure it out.
So when we're playing a normal game of Civ 4, a quick game is easily 6 to 10 hours, and that's even multiplayer on the fast speed. So how are you going to get that experience down to 2 to 3 hours in Civ Rev?
Well, I've already done it. That makes it easy. I'm not sure if it's 2 to 3 yet, and 2 to 3 is sort of a goal, but it's not sort of a hard and fast rule. If the games ended up being 4 hours or 5 hours, but they still felt really fun, then that's what it would be. So we're still working on that, and it's a trade-off between how quickly the game feels to you, how long different presentation aspects take, stuff like that. I know that when I play on Sid's prototype, I think I can get through a full game in probably 2.5 to 3 hours. When I play on the production version with all the bells and whistles and the effects going off and the better combat animation stuff like that, it does tend to take a little bit longer. Problem is then we start to feel like, wow, that's too long. We're trying to figure out a good middle ground between ease of play and having high production values in there at the same time. That probably didn't really answer it, did it?
Well, it's like, what exactly? I mean, what is different?
Well, that part's easy. The tiles that you play on in the map represent larger areas, so there's less distance to get around the map. There's slightly fewer techs, but all the key techs that you would expect are there. Gunpowder is there, ironworking and bronzeworking and, you know, things like that, writing and alphabet and all the way up to base flight and superconductor, things like that. So the stuff that you expect is there, but there's not a lot of fluff. Shall we say. So that's been pared down a little bit. There's less civs on the map, but you start a little bit closer to them. So it is very much like one of those quick games that you play in Civ 4.
I think the less units with greater attributes when you upgrade them. Like with Civ 4, it might be 15% increase in fighting in forest or 20%. And in Revolution, it's more drastic, the differences when you upgrade.
Yeah, like 50%, 100%.
And having fewer units with stronger upgrades allows you to go through the tech tree quicker because you don't have to have a tech that unlocks the next unit in a string of 60. It's a very tiered thing, but it's pretty similar to what Sarin did. When we started Civ 4, the hope was, can we get a multiplayer game down to 6 hours? Right now, a multiplayer game in Civ 3 would take like 20 or 30, or I'm not sure, but I remember around that ballpark. And what Sarin did with the modes was decrease the requirements for certain things and increase the speed at which other things are made. And so it's like that same scale was approached to Revolution mixed with having fewer units, having fewer things. I mean, I really think the attention span of a console player when you're sitting in front of your TV is very different than the internet browsing, you know, long game playing PC market.
The ultimate goal would be that a guy or gal could come home from work, maybe eat dinner and sit down and play a game before they have to go to bed, you know, finish one.
And without the Civ 4 going to bed.
One more
time. Seven. Drinking 3 cups of coffee. I mean, we've all done that too, but we really want a good night's sleep after the game.
Right. Well, we figured that'll still happen. You'll just have to play a second game.
So that question was from The Intricacy over at CFC, and he also asked, is there any chance that inter-platform multiplayer will be available?
Yeah, as soon as we can get a really big group hug between Microsoft and Sony.
We're going to just add Nintendo for fun.
Yeah, let's just all three of them. I don't think it's going to happen because Xbox Live is a closed system. If we were making a game that was Xbox 360 and, say, Windows Vista, we might be able to do it, but that's somewhere down the road.
Once we patch Civ 4.
Right. Right, once the Revolution patch comes out.
Yeah.
That just became gospel. You know what?
Refer to the previous.
There's already
message.
A thread about that. I don't see it happening. We talked about it. We would have loved to have seen it, but it's probably not going to happen.
Oh, Sony and Microsoft, if PC and Macs can get along, why can't you?
Yes. PC and Mac get along? Wait a minute.
Well, as far as they can play multiplayer games together.
Well, that's true.
Continuing on the multiplayer, does this game take advantage of Xbox Live or PlayStation Home's online options for anything more than set up multiplayer games? That was a question by Kale. And an addition by me, Sid also mentioned at Leipzig in an interview that you'll be doing some new things with multiplayer that haven't been done before, especially on Xbox Live. Could you elaborate on that?
We're taking full advantage of everything that Xbox Live has to offer, and we're also going to do a lot of the same things on the PS3 through GameSpy. And so that means that there's going to be ranked games, there's going to be leaderboards, there's going to be auto matchmaking. I think the biggest thing that's different about the online community is the Game of the Week thing. which is actually a single-player game, but you get to then compare your results in an apples-to-apples comparison with other people all over the world.
That sounds interesting.
You should probably ask Barry to bring in Dan McGarry, programmer, and have him discuss this later on. I'm really excited by the stuff that they're adding, but that's definitely an expertise, understanding the community of the live service and making sure that there's a reason to come back every week. Very different than making sure the core game is fun, but they're very intertwined. And I think, you know, having the guy designing that and making that happen would be really fun to hear.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea for you guys to get McGarry on sometime.
That sounds like a plan to me.
Yep.
I just followed you.
Yep.
Poor guy.
I'm just trying to make her see that she's playing the game of the week.
No singing. No.
What? What did we tell you?
So while we're on about Xbox Live and stuff, are we going to see any sort of downloadable content? Would it be free or?
There'll be both free and microtransaction content. This will be both on Xbox Live and on PS3, you know, through home. You know, anything from like new gamer pictures to maps. We're still working on a lot of that stuff. We're working with both Microsoft and Sony. We've been having internal meetings about that stuff. So there's definitely going to be stuff out there, and it won't all be for pay. And some of the stuff is just going to be available because we want to keep people excited about the game.
All right. I assume that for the downloadable stuff for Xbox, you'll need a version with a hard disk, right?
It might depend on the download, because something like Gamer Pictures would probably not take up a whole lot of space.
You
could put that on a card.
I can imagine the new Catherine model being a Gamer Picture. She's cute. Did I mention that?
She's You know, I think almost all of the really serious 360 guys have hard drives now.
Yeah, exactly.
My machine was a base machine, a core machine, but only because it was bought for me by people at work. The first thing I did when I hooked it up was go out and buy the hard drives.
Just as an aside, as one of the best advantages that Barry mentioned for the advantage of working on consoles, it would be great if every console was the same. And I have to say, I love the console with the hard drive. So if you are thinking about buying a 360 and you're going to play awesome games on it like Revolution, do get the hard drive one. Yeah. Don't get the one without it, please. I don't know why. Don't think about it.
Dorian gets a commission on every one sold with the hard drive.
No, they're going to find me on every non-hard drive one. That's the way it works.
The opposite.
The opposite.
Yeah.
The remission, not the commission.
Another question is, save is always dependent more or less on a 1-2 tile moves per turn, roughly. Any chance that Revolution sports a more tactical move system, such as Advanced Wars or Nektaris or something like that?
No, and mainly because it sort of goes back to board games and stuff like that, which is sort of what the original Civ was kind of trying to imitate. When you have board games, you have games that are tactical, you have games that are strategic, you have games that are operational in scope. Civ sort of lives in that realm of strategic to operational because you're making a lot of really high-level operational decisions like, what am I researching and what is my global government? Things like that. But then you're also making strategic decisions based on, okay, well, I want to attack this. Which direction should I go from? And things like that. If we also added the tactical element, one of the things that Civ sticks to, and he sort of learned it way back on Covert Action, is that he's learned a lesson that you don't want to try to put too much into a game. And the problem would be if we made the battles, say, tactical, then let's say that each battle then takes, you know, some amount of time, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you know, whatever it is to play out. Then you come back out of the battle and you're like, oh, wait, what was I doing? That's the problem that he had in Covert Action. He felt like he had these two different games going on at the same time. And if you got too involved in one, you forgot where you were in the other. So I think that there could be a good tactical game based in the Civ world, but I don't know that it would live with the strategic and the operational aspects of what we come to know as Civ. But I love Advanced Wars.
I think I understood from the previews, although it was quite clear to me, that research will have tracts now. It won't be completely open-ended. Is that true? And if so, how does that work?
It's not completely open-ended, but you can sort of pick your way through. If you are more of a military guy like Jake, we talked about earlier, who's one of our programmer designer guys, you can sort of pick your way through and say, like, okay, I want to get bronze working, and I want to get iron working, I want to work my way towards gunpowder. The prices of the techs are based on how many of the connectors you have to the tech. If there's two that lead into a tech and you only have one of them, then that tech is going to be more expensive than if you had both of them. So the way Sid's got it worked out is that if you want to go that way, then you can, but it's going to take you longer to get that tech but by putting something else in there that sort of leads to it, then he's sort of easing you into another direction at the same time and saying, well, it'd be cheaper if you also researched this. So there's that trade-off. And we did want to make it feel like you could do whatever your strategy was and that you could change your strategy when you felt you needed to. Like, you might be out there being like a military guy and saying, oh boy, I'm going to tear everybody up. And then you go, wow, that guy's got knight armies. Okay, I need to back off. I'm an economic guy now. So you need to be able to switch gears really quickly. And I think this game allows you to do that.
All right, makes sense. Although I think that's the same thing as in Civ 4. In Civ 4, you also have a cheaper tax depending on how many prerequisites you have.
Yeah, it's similar. Sid certainly aware of all of the Civ products that have come, and he did work with Soren pretty closely on certain aspects of Civ 4, so it's very possible that some of that stuff came right from there.
In an earlier GameSpot feature, the Seven Cities of Gold is discovered, and I recognized it right away because I've actually played Seven Cities of Gold, the PC game for the same title, and I actually still have my copy. And then later on, in another write-up on GameSpot, it is noted that the Seven Relic feature, where they're located on the game's maps, like the game of the same name. So how are the location of the relics on maps determined, and what more can you tell us about them? And why pay such homage to the game of the same title in Civ Rev, or was that unintentional?
It's not that it was intentional, but I will say that Seven Cities of Gold is one of my all-time favorite games. I actually played it on the Commodore 64 originally. And I know that Sid was really good friends with Danny Bunton. They had talked about many things, and he's a big fan of Seven Cities as well. But the number seven is actually, if you've been following Civ, number seven is a fairly magical
yes.
number throughout Civ. You know, seven is just, there's always seven wonders in an era. There's always, back in Civ 1, Civ 2, you could have seven opponents, you know, and we had seven religions in Civ 4. Seven just comes up a lot. The seven relic thing wasn't so much related to the Seven Cities of Gold, but having the Seven Cities as one of the relics was sort of a light homage. You know, it just is a really cool concept. There's other ones in there, and they all promote exploration. You're trying to get out there, and we want to make sure that, especially for new players, experienced Civ players know, like, I got to get out there, I got to find stuff, you know. But we found that guys that didn't know what Civ was would plant a city, and then they would sort of be like, okay, I'll sit here. This is fine, you know. And they didn't really get out and explore. Maybe they might explore their continent with a warrior or something like that, but they wouldn't get on a boat. They wouldn't build a boat and go out. So the relics, by having hints of relics that are out there, it sort of gets people motivated to, oh, okay, let me go find that. There's cool ones. I'm not sure which ones we've already shown. Let's see. Seven Cities we've shown, and I'm trying to remember what we showed at Leipzig. I can't remember, but there's seven of them. And I don't want to step on any marketing toes and reveal too many.
Yeah.
We won't tell.
Yeah, right.
In the same feature, there's a note from the culture advisor. Next economic milestone occurs at 250 gold. We get
right.
one now because we're at 100 gold. How are those values calculated?
They're sort of a simplified exponential type series, like 100, 250, 500, 1,000. It sort of builds you up that way. They are static. Doesn't matter, like, if you're playing on a different map size or if you're playing on a different difficulty level. Those happen at about the same time. They always happen at the same milestones. As far as how they were calculated, Sid has just an innate ability of knowing how things feel. And partly it's because he's got so much experience. And also it's just because as he's creating prototypes, he's constantly playing them and saying, like, well, that's not right. Let me tweak that. And he does have a tendency to tweak things in bigger values. He doesn't try to hunt around for little differences of a couple percent or 10% or whatever it is. If something's not quite right, he'll double it. If that's not correct, then maybe he'll split the difference. But he doesn't spend a lot of time like trying to inch his way to an answer. He wants to zero in on it really fast.
Who's responsible for the dialogue that's in Revolution so far? In other words, where should we direct our hate mail?
No, not hate mail. Love mail.
That's all Sid all the time. So far, every bit of that has been stuff that Sid's written. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's going to go in that we haven't really gotten in because we do want it to be a lot more contextual. We think it's very interesting, especially when the AI leaders come up and point out something that's going on in the game and say, like, well, is that what you meant to do? Or we notice that that unit's doing really well, or we notice that unit's right outside our city, or we notice that your war with the Arabs isn't going so well. You know, there's all these things that sort of come up. You know, so he puts all that stuff in, and it makes it a little bit tougher to do localization because the stuff's in the code, but we actually have tools to pull that stuff out and help with the process.
I think my favorite of the witty dialogue so far has been the science advisor about saying, oh, I want this so bad.
Gotta have the precious.
Yeah, he's great.
Just a quick aside, is it true that based on some of the gameplay video that was on GameSpot, the military advisor looked an awful lot like the foreign advisor and vice versa?
Yeah, at the time we didn't have all the guys created. We're going to be at E for All in October, and I think we should have all of the advisors with all of their era-specific costumes for that event.
Okay.
Yeah, the military advisor should only be showing up for military things. We have a foreign advisor, a domestic advisor, a military advisor, and a science advisor.
Oh, okay. So it's not like it was his twin or something.
No, no.
Okay.
I'm going to combine the next two questions because they're kind of similar. Basically, it's the decision on console versus PC. Why have you targeted consoles and or console gamers? And also related to that, what the reactions have been for PC gamers. A lot of them seem to have somewhat angrily have said it's just a dumbed-down version of Civ. And what's your answer to that?
Well, boy, this is this opens up a can of worms.
Yeah.
The thing is that it seems like there's a lot of defensiveness in the PC community where everybody seems already assume that because we're doing one game for the consoles, we're abandoning the PC. We've been a PC developer for as long as I've been here, for as long as there's been a Firaxis. All the other ports, like if there's a Mac port, it comes from another company. You know, we don't do that stuff here. We've been a PC house for a long time. We wanted to spread out and do something different. And the key is that what we're trying to do is get more people to play Civ. I think it would be really confusing if we had tried to make a game like Revolution on the PC, because then there would have been a lot more hand wrenching and clothes ripping and people like, oh my God, dogs and cats living together. I believe that we would have had a much harder time trying to sell a game like Revolution on the PC, where it would get very confusing for people like, well, which one do I want to buy? So if we make a clean break, move it someplace else, and I think it's very possible that some of the people that pick up Civilization for the first time on a 360 or on the PS3 or on the DS will eventually want to gravitate back over and say like, oh, well, it started over here. I think I should go try that game too. I don't think there shouldn't be so much defensiveness about it, because we never said that we're abandoning the PC, and we don't intend to abandon the PC, so just enjoy the game.
And personally, I think the name says it all. I mean, it's called Civilization Revolution. I mean, we know that we're doing something very different than what we've done in the past, and I can promise you it shouldn't affect any of the hardcore PC users' experience. When Civ Revolution comes out, Civ 4 will not be patched. Okay, you know, it's your game still works, and we promise you that we love the PC market. You know, I think it's just like, if you just ported Civ 4 on a console, it would baffle the average console player.
Right.
And the things, making something easy to use isn't making it for dumb people. I think the hope would be, okay, let's make it really easy to use on a controller, but let's make the gameplay very complex. You know, it's certainly, it can't be as complex as a 20-hour Civ 4 multiplayer game with some of the best players out there. But we really hope that it can be a great game for just about anyone that has a 360. Just about anyone that has a PlayStation 3. Share the experience. We want to make our games appeal to more people. And the best way to do that is to get the games out for the people that don't have a PC at home that they're using all the time.
There, that wasn't so bad.
Direct all hate mail.
So have you gotten a lot of hate mail for this?
No, we read the forums, and you know, some guys have been pretty open about it and said almost what I said, where it's like, you know, we're just trying to get a new audience, and some guys are act like it's the end of the world. I think it's closer to we're trying to get a new audience to the end of the world, but that's just me. I'm a glass half full kind of guy.
Yeah.
Okay, we had a question from Snoopy earlier, which was, why have you targeted console and or console gamers? And he also asks, his name is Daniel, lives in Singapore. He says, the game appears simplistic with a fun attitude, but are the features more or less as deep as in Civilization 4?
Simplistic is a word that I don't like to use. It comes up a lot. It sort of goes hand in hand with dumbed down, or I've seen oversimplified, things like that. I like to use the word streamlined. Or if I'm going to say simplified, I'm going to say perfectly simplified, not overly simplified. It does have a fun attitude. It's meant to attract people. My son is 9 years old and really interested in Civ. There's no way I can sit him down in front of Civ 4 at 9 years old and expect him to pick it up, although he would be game to try. But I sat him down in front of Revolution one night when we were working late, right before Leipzig, and he had a ball. Now, I'm not saying we're targeting 9-year-olds. I happen to think that my son's very smart. So, And then as far as the features being more or less deep, it's sort of a trade-off because, as I said, you know, we don't have religion like Civ 4 has. We don't have some of the other advanced concepts. It actually added some different things that have never been in Civ before, like the idea of naval support for battles. There's things like that that have never been in Civ before that we're trying out. So it's sort of an amalgam. I think generally it's going to be as deep as Civ 4. It's just not as complex as Civ 4.
I would also recommend, why don't you wait and see and play the final version? I mean, if chess superficially looks like it might not be very deep compared with Civ 4, but I don't think you can doubt the strategic depths of the game of chess. And that's a much smaller set of decisions you're making in your turns than in Civ 4. And that's the hope. I mean, the complexity of the game isn't what makes the game have depth. It's the decisions that you make and the way that those decisions get layered on each other that give you true depth. So definitely please check the game out, even if you want to just rent it. You don't want to give us your money. Rent the game. It's lived up to your expectations, you know? I mean, it's so easy to hate on something before you even see it.
So how is the game coming along so far?
It's coming along really well. I'm not sure if you saw any of the stuff from Leipzig, but we're basically just about alpha, probably like the middle of October. I think it might be the 15th. Then we're going to be beta sometime in the middle to the end of November, and then we start the certification process by the end of the year. So we're getting pretty close.
So to open a slightly smaller can of worms, would there ever be a PC version of Civ Rev?
It is technically possible, but in my opinion, it wouldn't make a lot of marketing sense because it confuses an already established market. There's a possibility that somewhere down the road, there could be sort of a convergence where the Revolution series has gotten closer to the PC version, and maybe there's a product that can unite the platforms, but I don't see that happening right away, you know, anytime in the near future.
Okay.
So I'm actually going to have to buy a console to play this game.
So sorry.
I don't get any royalties on that, so.
The most asked question that we received. Surprise.
Yeah. Is this really Civ 5 in disguise? The answer is no. Since I saw it on the sheet, I'll just go ahead and say it. Absolutely not. We're trying to bring it to a new audience.
Okay. Barry announces Civ 5. What?
I announced not Civ 5.
You announced not Civ 5?
Wait.
All right, news time.
Woohoo!
Woo. The Take-Two third quarter results. The net revenue was $40 million below last year's total because last year GTA Liberty City was released. And it lost $58.5 million or 81 cents per share. But they don't include any sales of Bioshock, so I'm not sure how much that matters.
Yeah, they had a pretty quiet quarter. There were no major game releases.
Yeah.
Well, their net loss was down compared to last year, so that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So maybe our big fears that they won't pull the plug on Civ are going to come to fruition. Civ 5? You can't release a Civ 5. We have no money.
Got news? Email news at apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, Snoopy369, Alexander I, or Luminatus via Apolton's forums at apolton.net/forums. You have entered the vault where segments cut from earlier episodes find relevance later. An archived Senate discussion from Episode 9 with Dan Q, Mackie, Imran, and Blake Walsh.
Shall we go to the Colosseums? Does anyone go?
Yes.
I do sometimes.
Yes.
They're very good culturally, and I don't know.
That is apparent.
They're very good happiness, I mean.
Oh.
Yeah, there we go.
That's better. I was getting it confused with the temple. Damn those temples.
Yeah, because there's been a couple of times in games where I've missed out on early religions, and I've had to build Colosseums because my happiness cap was so low.
The other thing is, now Warlords 2.8, they've been reduced in cost to 80 hammers. I think there were one team, probably, or 100. So now they're the same cost as a team pool, and both provide plus one happy. So if you build team pools, you should build Colosseums.
Yeah, there seems to be a natural progression. This user, Ken Gonan, he wants to know, what is the point? Because when cities get seriously big, I've always had enough luxury resources to keep the populace in check. Well,
quote-unquote. That might be, but when can you have too much happiness? Maybe it's not the first building you're going to build in order to help your happiness factor, but not build it at all seems unnecessary. I don't have maintenance for buildings anymore. Build it.
And also have creatively half price, which is nice.
And on higher difficulty levels, when your happiness cap is a lot lower, and or also on larger maps, when you have these gaps between when you research something and you've built a bunch of buildings and you don't have much else other than units to build, you can just toss one in there and it'll help in the long run.
There you go. Planning for the future.
I'd also like to say how good Greek unique building is. It's the Odin, I think. I'm not sure how you say it. Probably Odin. Plus two happiness, which is another happiness, and it has plus three culture, which is as much as a theatre. And it comes on construction, which is a Greek you want as soon as possible with catapults. So it's perfect.
Modcast time?
Yep.
Yay! Woo!
In the Modcast, we talk about hot issues that have happened in the forums.
Leaders that should not be there, apparently, and he's disputing the historical worth of these leaders. I wanted to make a general point, because it's not history, but I just found the original post to be very amusing. Churchill? What did he do that was so awesome?
Oh.
And Lincoln? Okay, you quashed a rebellion. Who cares? What the hell?
Yeah.
And Roosevelt.
Ramses is also in there. Gilgamesh.
Yeah, catharsis here saying Montezuma, didn't he sort of destroy the Aztecs in the end?
Yeah.
I would be to see Montezuma not in the game.
No, but I think when you click on some of the leaders that shouldn't be there, Montezuma would be a good person to put there. That's what I figured it would be. But then I saw Churchill, Lincoln, Roosevelt, Gilgamesh, and Ramses.
You're like, what?
I said, oh, only the most important people of those saves.
Well, with the Montezuma thing, as Methartho-io, or... Nah, I don't care anymore.
The guy in Post 7.
Methartho-io. Methartho-io.
He rightfully points out that there was more than one Montezuma.
Mm.
Yeah, but they clearly refer to the second one, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And if you want to have a good Aztec leader, there was an obvious alternative. I forget his name right now.
Cuauhtémoc.
Montezuma the First was the fifth Aztec Empire. I mean, I guess they consolidated everything, but they kind of expanded a little bit. But he wasn't considered to be all that big. He was just a ruler. Yeah, and I think what I was talking about is Kotel, perhaps, or...
Ayuizotl, or however you pronounce it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would be a much better choice, but...
Exactly.
Yeah, I do think I agree that it probably refers to Montezuma the Second and not the First.
Yeah, I mean, they're purely going by fame here, not by accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Mao would be another contestant for leader.
Yeah, because Mao is well known, and while he did have a huge impact, we're talking about China here.
Yeah.
Okay. There's plenty of folks.
De Gaulle.
Yeah, De Gaulle was interesting as well. When he first was announced, I was like, did you just put him in here because of a World War II scenario?
I think that's part of it, but part of it also because they wanted another modern leader in the game. As far as that goes, there aren't too many great choices left.
That's true.
Guitar Hero suggests Boris Yeltsin.
Boris Yeltsin.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we need two new traits, incompetent and drunk.
Please send all hate mail. Send it to me too.
Stan has to see this.
I want some. And also, you know, I guess if you're talking about civilization leaders, the Inca could also. And a K-Pak is all right, but there's others that which are better. At least two, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, you can argue about that. You could make a decent case for one year kid.
Yeah, but I don't think Churchill.
Yeah, that's not necessarily a bad choice.
Or Roosevelt. Yeah, anyone's going to say, you know, except for the one guy who started the thing, is going to be like, what the hell is Churchill doing here? You know, like, I think the guy objected to Gilgamesh because it was the guy on the Smurfs. He thought he got confused. Why are we putting the evil guy from the Smurfs in? I don't understand that.
Poor Jesse.
His music is la 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 la.
No humming that, please.
Oh, Loso says, wasn't Napoleon similar to Hitler? Then why is he in the game and Hitler isn't? Oh, good lord.
Oh, oh no, not the Hitler. Why is Hitler not in the game?
No, no,
no. Oh, no.
Make them stop.
And I agree with the figure on the second page that Ragnar of the Vikings seems to be somewhat fictional.
Yeah, that's...
So they may have been able to find someone who was more real life. I'm not sure anyone was particularly attached to Ragnar anyway. Everyone's like, who's that? And Brennus, I guess, is not... Well...
In this case, they really don't make a choice between which Brennus. I mean, in the encyclopedia, they even describe both of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we have a whole bunch of Celtic leaders to choose from. I guess they could have gone with First and Getarix.
Speaking of leaders...
Yeah, I saw that as well. Position for Second Holy Roman Emperor. Thorold the Fifth.
That's fair.
Now, the other point that's brought up in that other thread, which was quite right, is... Was Charlemagne really a good choice for Holy Roman Empire? I would imagine that Frederick Barbarossa would be more connected with the Holy Roman Empire. But I think they just wanted Charlemagne in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Point has been made a couple of times. They created Holy Roman Empire because they wanted Charlemagne in and not the other way around.
They didn't want to throw him into, like, France or Germany.
Yeah, which I personally think would have been the ideal solution, give him to both France and Germany. There's no reason they can't do that. But, oh well.
Well, they might be like, no, we can't have Charlemagne against Charlemagne.
Oh, well. Go 3 lines of code to make sure that doesn't happen. Whatever.
He was supposedly born in Herstal, which is in Belgium, so give him to Belgium.
Let the Belgians take him.
That's not.
Oh, and of course on that thread that Dan linked to about addition for a second Holy Roman Emperor, Mary Teresa would be worthy, and she would also be a female.
Yeah.
Well, I would hope as a she would be a female, yes. that would make sense.
Yeah, I have definitely proposed that this game could use a few more female leaders at this point, and mm-hmm. she would be a good candidate.
Mm. Would she be slapping people around, too?
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, sorry. No one's going to be as hot as Catherine and do that. What is it with you guys and liking being slapped around?
Don't ask. Girls who slap, boys who play Civ.
My hand is ready.
Actually, speaking of that, in a way...
Oh, boy.
In a way, it's kind of related.
It's yours, buddy.
These guys really need to get out more.
Yeah.
Well, I think we know why Boudicca is the love of this person's life.
This is having to do with cleavage.
I know of 2 reasons why.
Someone in this thread just has to use it to bash Revolution. Guitar Hero says, he's the same person that mentioned Boris Yeltsin, so...
Oh, well, there you go.
He says, it's embarrassing enough that Sid is actually selling out to the public. Oh.
What? Oh, no, he wants to sell games. How horrible.
And a sign that someone is thinking way too much about Civ. Civ 4, Viking scenario music outrage.
What?
I'm outraged!
They split the Viking scenario music up! Oh no! What?
Okay.
The whole point of the song was a contrast between the first part, slow and sinister, and the second part, faster but still warlike and threatening. The majority, 83%, has voted, what the heck are you on about? I like the second response. Thor did it.
Someone thinks that you should be able to change difficulty level mid-game.
What?
But they don't want to go from harder to easier. They want it to go from easier to harder. Oh, of course you do.
Maybe put it as an option. As long as you can't take advantage of something, I don't know. If it's just a single-player game, I don't see too much of a problem in that, actually.
If the only option is to make the game harder, well, okay.
Well, if it's to make the game easier, too, it doesn't much matter unless... And maybe a Civ 2 would, like, at the end of the game when you have your score, it says, in big red letters, you cheated.
You lose, loser.
The fourth and final part of our interview with Firaxis Games is Barry Caudle and Dorian Newcomb.
It's really tough to just go straight into the industry as a full producer. A lot of guys come up through QA. I've hired some guys as either assistant producers or associate producers based on their ability to write well, to be organized, and to solve problems.
So how did you come to find the Peloton?
I could be flip and say, oh, I was just in the garage looking for something, and there it was.
How much do you feel that your Civ experience helps you in your job?
Well, look at where I work.
I
will say that it did help a lot because when I went to apply for the QA position back at MicroProse, I had already played a lot of Civ 1, I had already played Civ 2, and one of the first questions the guy asked me, Tom Falzone, who was my manager back then, one of the first things he asked me was, how familiar are you with Civilization? I was like, oh, I love Civilization. You know, I'm great at it. I turned out I wasn't so great at it, but I thought I was great at it. Then for the next year, when I got that job, all I did was test Civilization II multiplayer. I think that having Civ experience has certainly helped me get into the industry, and it certainly helped me establish myself in the industry over the years. And it's great to be working on it because I've always loved it.
So sort of relatedly, for people who might want to break into the game industry, there's probably more to it than just knowing the game and loving the game. What kind of advice can you give?
QA is obviously the easiest path to just break in. Somebody like me, like, I know enough programming to get my face slapped, and I know enough. Nobody wants me to do any art, but I understand the concepts behind it. But for me to get into the industry, the only ticket that I would have had is QA. And so obviously loving games, being able to talk about games on a high level is important. But at the same time, you have to be very organized. You have to be able to write well in a way that conveys the idea. You're basically telling programmers and artists, you know, your baby's ugly. And when you find a bug, if you say it the wrong way, then they're just going to resent you. They're not going to respect the fact that you found this problem with the game that they need to fix. They're just going to be like, oh, well, this guy stinks. You know, I don't want to listen to him. So there's a lot of communication and stuff like that. And so if you're trying to get in the industry, a love of games and ability to discuss games is important, but there's a lot of other things to it. I could probably write a whole article about it, I guess.
Which will be on a Peloton exclusively. Excellent.
I seem to commit to a lot of things on this show.
Dan's our equivalent of a producer.
How did you come to find Apolliton?
I started looking at Apolliton in Civ 3 because I think Sauron was using it as a resource even way back when, and we would see a lot of the news. It was really interesting for me to see the way that the news and the screenshots were being received by the fans, and Apolliton was the primary spot I went to find out what people really thought. And I found it very encouraging after Civ 3 launched, from an art point of view, to see sort of what icons were being used by the people in the forums and what art was really resonating, and to find out what were the first things in art that were replaced by the mod community. You know, because I know that for the terrain in Civ 3 was really pretty bright, and there was a lot of passes made on the terrain to sort of darken up or make it a little bit easier to look at for a long period of time. And so from that point on, I would visit Apolliton often just to get a vibe for what was working for the most hardcore players.
Very good.
Yeah, it's one of those things you try not to let people know that you read the forums at all. It's a fine line because then people edit themselves. Like, what you really want is honest opinion. And if someone that is a decision maker here posts something to a forum, all of a sudden people start editing themselves. And what you really want is sort of unedited reality checks. So it's a fine line. You really want to have a dialogue with the community, but you really want the community to have an honesty that doesn't censor itself for opportunities to have more influence or whatnot. So it's a hard thing.
I'm not sure if that was too much of an issue with Civ 3.
If anyone's looking to contact Dorian through a Poulton, just send a private message to I'm not Dorian, and you'll get him.
Exactly. Non-Phyraxis employee number 3.
I think it was during Civ 3, just like Dorian, I can't remember looking at a Poulton before we actually shipped the original vanilla Civ 3, but I know that I was introduced to it right after Civ 3 came out. Then as soon as I came over here and started working, one of the things was that I would go in and be sort of like the community liaison. I got on to a Poulton, and that's why I had the name Speed Bump, because if somebody was really upset, I was supposed to be the guy that calmed them down.
So, when you're not working on Phyraxis projects, what are you engaged in?
I'm into karate, martial arts in general, and I was there this morning when I was supposed to be here. But that's one thing. I've also been a musician for most of my life, and that's what I did for many, many years before getting into the game industry. And I still play a lot. I just played last night with a band called the Junkyard Saints in downtown Baltimore, and I'm playing tonight with a wedding band down in D.C., and other than that, it's whatever my son's doing. So my son, sometimes he's doing karate, sometimes he's doing soccer, piano lessons, all that kind of stuff. It's a busy life. In my really, really leftover free time, I play games.
Any games in particular?
It's funny because I don't have as much time. So I do play a lot of sports games. I love the college football, college basketball games. I got all pro football from the 2K guys, from the Visual Concepts guys, and I really like that.
So you're the guy.
That's me.
Yeah.
And then I also play like a lot of stuff on DS, a lot of stuff on PSP, because it's easier for me to right now to play on a handheld because I don't have to fight for television time with the rest of my family. Played Pokemon with my son. He got Diamond, I got Pearl. Just got Picross for the DS, which I love. And actually on the Wii, I've been playing a lot of stuff, but the thing that's been taking up most of my time is I got on Virtual Console, I got Paper Mario, and I've just been playing that every night. Oh, and BioShock. I should mention that.
Oh, that's good, because you might have received some emails or messages saying, oh, Barry's abandoning the PC! Barry's abandoning the
that's
PC!
That's right.
Do you listen to any other podcasts?
Yeah, I listen to a couple. I listen to the Dice Tower that's on, it's a board game podcast that's on Fun Again Games. It's hosted there, and I listen to, I'm not sure, it's not really, it's like a video podcast. It's another board game one. It's called Board Games with Scott. That same guy is also involved in one called On Board Games, I think, OBG. I just discovered those recently, so I guess there's a pattern there. They're all about board games, but.
Yeah, I was about to say.
The funny thing is that I love them, and I listen to the Joes all the time, and I buy them, but I never have time to play them. So I just have this huge stack of games that I don't play.
Oh, so do you have the Civilization board game from Eagle Games?
I do. I do. I'm looking right at it. I have almost all the Eagle games here, and then I also have just the ones that I've brought in here. I have several train games that I brought in while we were working on railroads. I have Pirates Cove, the German version of Pirates Cove that we brought in when we were working on Pirates. And then I also have some games from, I can't remember. They made the World of Warcraft board game. Oh, why can't I think of the name? They'll kill me.
I don't think they listen to this show. I think you're okay.
That's good. That's good. They made the Doom board game and the Doom expansion, Twilight Imperium. I can't remember. I just can't remember the name. Fantasy Flight. Fantasy Flight Games.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Yeah, you're okay.
They Googled it.
That way, if they're listening, you know, at some point.
At some point.
I remembered.
Send you free games.
That's right.
Speaking of free games, Barry. No, just.
Dan.
You don't have them already? You guys let me know. I'll take care
Woo-hoo!
Of you. Ooh. That's only for the people on this show. Not for people listening.
Don't worry. Nobody's listening anyway, so.
So also, have you listened to Polycast in the past? If so, how often? What do you like, don't like to see changed, added, etc.?
This is definitely my first, I haven't listened to any of the Polycasts, but I'm a huge podcast fan. Like anything that I'm really into, I sort of subscribe to an iTunes and listen to while I cut the grass, while I fold the laundry, all that stuff. I think it's like the best thing around right now. And from this experience, I'm definitely going to download some of the past posts. Yeah, I mean, is there a way to subscribe online?
Yep.
We have an RSS feed, and we are on iTunes as well. So
cool. So I'm going to go home, just subscribe, update my iPod, and check it out over the next few weeks.
And we're going to ask Barry to follow up and check your iPod to see that you've actually done that.
Oh, so. My God. Dan.
And then he'll say, update your iPod. I'm a producer.
That'll require a meeting.
No, but I really am excited. I mean, not just because, ooh, I want to see how I sound. I'm really curious what the issues are, because games are a lot more interactive than film. With film, you're like, this is the movie I want to make. This is the story I want to tell. And, you know, if you don't like the story, I don't care. It's, you know, it's a movie. With games, someone's experience while playing the game and the kind of feedback you give is essential. I mean, that is the game. I really find it useful to find out honest opinions from people and to find out what's the real hot button issues with the community at any given moment.
Excellent. So if we asked you to return to the show, you would?
I would love that, as long as I have something good to say. I mean, I'm always glad to blah, blah, whatever, whatever. But if I come, I'd like it to be valuable.
Or then we can say for the rest of us. Wait, what?
As you know, I've listened to Polycast in the past because I think I sent you an email correcting something that I had heard on one, and then I also did the lead-in. So I've gotten most of the last bunch. I'm not sure that I got the earliest ones.
That's okay.
I've definitely probably gotten the last 7, 8, 10 possibly. Just put them on my machine and I listen to them while I'm working.
Excellent.
Ooh.
Probably sent in the correction because we referred to you as producer, not executive producer.
No, there was something else, too. There was before Beyond the Sword came out, and I think I sent something where you guys had said something on the show, and I just sort of said, well, it's not really that.
Oh.
I can't remember now, so it must not have been very important.
Would you ever agree to do this show again?
Sure. I might even be on time.
You have entered the vault where segments cut from earlier episodes find relevance later. An archive mailbag answer from episode 15 with Wouter, Mackie, and Kenneth Impaler WRG Furland.
We got an email from Carol or Carol Cox.
Please send your hate mail too.
He or she says, I was given an old Mac 145 by a dear friend about 10 years ago. It had Civilization on it and I loved it. Just an old black and white game, but it was challenging and fun. I just bought on eBay a 165 and would like to play this old game again. Where can I find or download a copy? I know it seems silly, but okay, it's a sentimental thing. Well, we don't condone the downloading of copies.
And even if we did, I think it's kind of hard to find Mac anything.
Yeah, definitely. This Civilization 1 for the Mac, that's going to be a challenge. They definitely don't make new copies of this anymore.
Haven't they even lost the source code for the original Civilization?
Oh, well, at this point, probably, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think that's around anymore, but you don't need to be able to buy the game.
Yeah, of course, someone could probably rewrite the code from scratch, such a small game.
Yeah, probably. But I did some searching around, and I did find one copy on eBay for exactly this, Civ 1 for Macintosh. It was released in 1995. I would advise listener or reader to go to eBay, where he or she also bought their computer, and to buy it from there. Search for Civilization space Mac, and you should be able to find it. And that's really the only place where you're going to find old games like this.
Wow, I can't believe it even still exists.
And yeah.
We totally nailed this one. Did we not?
Ooh, yeah, I think so. As good an answer as we're going to be able to provide.
Mm-hmm. Short of actually going out and buying it for it, I think that's about as helpful as we can be.
Going, here we go.
We don't quite do that yet. Ooh, we get email. We're important.
Call in today.
301-637-659, 301-637-POLLY.
44-020-7871-7659, 44-020-7871-POLLY.
Or you can Skype us at the Polycast.
Log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net.
Where lies the future of Firaxis? With consoles, PCs, or both?
Yes.
Yes. Good answer.
Thank you so much for all the work, and thanks for actually liking the stuff that we're making enough to, you know, make it part of your everyday routine. Your life, you know what I mean. It's just cool. So thanks a lot.
Thanks for making it, and thanks for giving us the time for this interview.
Yes, thank you.
All right, well, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Barry.
It was a lot of fun.
Bye.
Bye.
And good night to the rest of you.
Record date September 15th, 2007. Flavor of the Week by American Hi-Fi Clip, copyright Island Records. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV Warlords and Beyond the Sword. Copyright 2007, a Poulton Civilization site at poulton.net.